Doesn't that computer know who you
don't
are?
Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is him.
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same
thing. I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my
friend? Onto a Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk.
And yes, it is Tech Talk.
Oh, boy, it's Tech Talk.
We've got Michael Tech Talk Kassler sitting over here, and Dave Sparky Saganaki, radio sweetheart of America. I believe, right? Isn't that the subtitle to...
Never mind that. Later on, we've got Jay Garman coming up with Geek Trivia. We're so lucky to have him on the program, and he does such a good job. And, Mike, I got to tell you, nobody speaks more clearly about technology issues with greater humor and insight than you do.
Well, thank you. What a wonderful way to start my day.
Yeah.
Have no
kissing up.
No complaints.
Sidekick kiss up.
Accepting that kind of a morning. And in fact, after Jay Garman, though, we've got some other people that are going to speak clearly. Actually,
who's
speaking
that?
Clearly, we've got John Pollard, who is the CEO of Jot. Jot has been a cool site of the week for us. They are a very cool service which allows you, and I've been using them for ages. I can't even remember life before Jot. Yeah, actually, I want to talk to them about it. It's one of those services that really changes you.
AJ and PJ.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
All right. I'm in the PJ, mode, yeah. I guess. Yeah, post Jot. Huh. But what they allow you to do is, I've got it set for speed dial on my phone. You call it up, and they ask you, who do you want to Jot? And you say, myself, Remember the Milk, my buddy Dave, whatever you've got set up in there for to allow you to Jot, and they connect with a lot of services.
Anything that you've prearranged.
You've prearranged, and when you speak your message, which can be up to 15 or 30 seconds long, it will be transcribed for you and then sent where you've asked it to be sent, by text message, whatever
you do. We'll use voice recognition technology. Put that into an email and send it.
Well, that's what I want to ask John about. I don't think it's using Voice Reco. I think they've got a band.
Voice Reco. Excuse me. I didn't realize. I wasn't up on the latest new buzz.
Sorry, if you're in the biz, we don't have time to say recognition. Yeah. It's got to be just Reco.
You don't have time to say it like a Cajun either. Oh, you got the recognition.
The recognition. Yeah. No, it's going to be I can't wait to find out from them, but I think it's a bunch of guys sitting in guys and gals and whatever sitting in a room listening to these messages as they come in. I think it's human human touch
and frantically typing them.
Yes, exactly.
I don't think it can be. Unless it's like really outsourced far.
Well, the thing is that I know that if you, and we'll talk about this of course when John is on, but I know that if you spell out something, it will come to you.
Yeah.
Typed. So if you say, make sure that, Sanaki calls me, and that's Sanaki, S-A-N, blah, blah, whatever. It'll actually, they'll put it in like it sounds, or like it was spelled, not like you may have pronounced it originally.
Well, maybe it's just really clever voice reco. We'll find out, though. Never mind all the speculation.
I'm not going to speculate.
What good does the speculation do us? We'll have the guy on from Jot. What's his name again?
John Pollard.
John Pollard.
He will be on with us in just a few minutes.
What's his position again?
CEO.
Oh, my God.
So we're going to the top. Oh. No messing around. No messing
around.
I'm going
to have to rein in my intimidation.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And we've got coming up cool stuff, too. Next week, we're going to have on two new cool things. One thing is going to be I've got, I believe, the VP of Marketing for Oracle Corporation is going to come on.
Oh, way cool.
So I'm excited to talk to him. Wow. He's going to talk to us about Oracle Open World 2008, which I will be attending this year in my guise as a reporter.
Yeah,
and
with journalistic cred.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Like I said, I need the fedora and the little, you know, press tab up in the corner. Yeah. Actually, I'm expecting when I get there, I'm expecting such a storm of disrespect from the fellow journalists. Because I'm expecting, you know, the kind of the Spicoli kind of guy, yeah. surfer dude. Like, yeah. dude,
well, take names.
Radio? What? Radio is so last decade. What? Have you heard of that internet thing?
Last
you know?
Millennium.
Yeah.
No, that's okay. Take names. We'll talk about them.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's right. That's right. They don't understand the power. The power of...
They don't
the spoken
know.
Word.
They don't. So. They just don't. That's how out of the loop they are. They don't know that Round Lake Heights is the information center of the universe.
Yeah, yeah.
Information technology that's center right. of the universe.
That's it, you know. And if you look at our guest list,
that's right, baby. You'd,
yeah, yeah.
Never mind us. But the hosts are unknown, but the guests
but
are famous.
But the guests are famous. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. It's true. I'm always surprised. We have just a fantastic, fantastic line of guests. Today being no exception, of course. Also, too.
Due to your hard work and charm, no doubt. You charm these.
That's
CEOs, CFOs.
It's not charm. It's just persistence.
Marketing.
I just keep sending emails to different people there. I make up names at the company and say, okay, well, the CEO's name is John. I'll just send an email to anything John related at Jot, and eventually something will get through.
I see.
That kind of thing.
Well, it's effective.
It does work.
You shouldn't reveal your methods.
Yeah.
Those internet guys will steal it.
They're gonna take that and use it for their spam programs. We'll talk about in a second. There was an interesting change in the Virginia case. The other thing I want to mention next week, do tune in too, because at the end of the show, if you're tired and bored of my picks for Cool Site of the Week, we've got a potential for a new regular, but I think we may just do like kind of a monthly relationship with a new company. I think they're related to ZDNet Media or somewhere around there, but it's they're called URL-esque. Kind of like burlesque, but without the B in the front.
Burlesque, I like that.
Burlesque.
I like that a lot.
And they do what I've been doing, which is they go through and they pick out just the coolest, neatest, most interesting kind of websites. They post them up there. They've got not a weekly, they've got like a daily kind of thing. But
yeah.
they're going to do a rundown of the best sites they found for the week for us. And they're going to do that in place of the Cool Sites of the Week next week. And we'll see how it goes and if we like them and if listeners like them. Hey, we'll keep them around. We'll bring them back on, kind of like we do with Mark Beer every once in a while. And, of course, we have our regular Jay Garman also.
Yeah.
So
that sounds great.
Yeah, eventually
I'm looking forward to it.
You'll only hear me for a minute or two in the beginning just to intro all of the regulars. Because we'll actually have good people on to talk.
Or maybe we need to expand to 2 hours.
Oh, you know, I've been...
I'm just kidding.
I know. You never mention to a DJ you might give him more time because that's it, you know?
That's like... let loose the dogs of ego. More time.
That's right. Oh, I think what I could do with an extra half hour, and it's like, oh man.
Yeah.
But hey, I did want to mention we were talking about spam and all that.
If Jeff Davis is listening, he's cringing.
Oh,
what about a spam?
Oh, there was a case a little while ago. I don't know if you'll remember. And of course, now that I'm trying to find it. Here it is. There was a Virginia law where who was it? He was like the seventh or eighth largest spam artist or most prolific spam artist in the country. Jeremy Janes was convicted for 9 years. This is back in 2003, somewhere around there. Well, they've just overturned the law which allowed them to convict him in Virginia. The Supreme Court overturned it and said it was unconstitutional.
Do you know if he was out on appeal during that time or was
no,
he?
No, he's been in jail. He's been serving his sentence.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, it served its purpose.
Yeah, yeah.
To some extent, anyway.
He was making $750,000 a month with this spam. Like I said, he was the seventh or eighth largest in the country.
Wow.
Now, of course, you'll probably remember that, in July, Robert Soloway, who was the quote-unquote spam king, he was sentenced to 47 months after pleading guilty as well. Of course, he was also brought up on tax evasion and some other things. But the reason that they've said now that this spam law is not constitutional is because it takes away freedom of speech regulations that we it overturns freedom of speech regulations.
Ah.
One of which is that part of the law, one of the codicils in the law, is that if you send email as someone else, if you're
aliasing,
you know, if you're pretending to be someone else, well then that is part of the spam law. And then if you send, you know, 10,000 emails, you'll be blocked. The problem with that is that of course it takes away from the free speech article, which allows you anonymous right to speak, so that you can't so people who use a pseudonym, for example,
right.
Or
yeah.
if you have a nom de plume for your for your email,
like Sparky Saganaki,
like Sparky. If you send emails as Sparky or me, you know, I send my emails as Tech Talk, obviously, yeah. That's not my real name.
Yeah.
You could be included,
not
or
yet.
Considered part of those spammers. Yeah. I haven't gotten the court's been holding that up for a while, but
your legal name changed.
That's
to,
right.
To Tech Talk.
That's right. So I thought that was interesting. This guy Jeremy Janes, though, he's, you know, if he gets out of the conviction for spam, there's so many other things that he's liable for. There's fraud and tax evasion and et cetera, et cetera. So
It's too bad. That'd be hard to enforce. If there was a law against annoying people, that would be good.
Well,
that would be subjective and be hard to enforce.
They're changing some of the laws on the telemarketing, I know. In fact, recently I was seeing that, you know, those phone calls you get where you get the phone call and you go, hello?
Yeah.
Hello, hello. You know, nobody picks up. It takes a couple of minutes. They've got laws in place now that is going to be a finable offense. That for every complaint they get, they'll fine the company a certain amount of money. That's caused by these war dialers.
That was a nice piece of acting through. You did, though. Hello? Hello? Hello?
I have been training as an actor.
Oh, have you?
For many years now.
Your thespian chaps are showing.
I've got all sorts. You know, I've got also. Maybe that's the podcast only song of the day I should play is Ben Folds' best I do the best imitation of me.
So, that's good. Yeah,
that's
hard to beat that.
So, or maybe we should do Duran Duran Hold Back the Rain actually for today.
Oh, by the way, our prayers and thoughts and concerns go out for the people in the Texas Gulf Coast. Hurricane Ike is kicking butt. I'm, you know, so sorry. And it took, you know, eventually the warnings got serious. How'd they put it? Like imminent loss of life or something?
You're
going to die. Get out of here.
It was kind of like, you know, everybody relates it back to Katrina, but it was different from that in that, it was up until the last
day.
You know, people are saying, it's a category 2. Don't worry about it.
And I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah, get out of here.
Kicked it up a notch or two.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's.
So we're getting a lot of rain from that here in Illinois right now.
Stuff.
On Saturday.
Is that what the rain here is
actually,
from?
Actually, I think it's. I don't know.
It may be pushing those.
I don't know that much about it.
Maybe pushing those fronts up or something. And
I don't pay adequate attention when I'm watching the weather at night. I just want temperature. You know, the next few hours. Okay, cool. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. I just want to know, is it nice enough to get out and run? And I'm happy. I went out running last night. It was raining and it was very refreshing. It was warm and a little bit humid, but you run through that rain and boy, it feels kind of nice.
Nice little cooling system. Hey, did you hear about this thing about this?
The clapper.
turn
on your computer by clapping.
That'd be great. I'd like to have one of those. No, they only sell those at Christmas time. I don't even think they sell them anymore. But
no, it's true.
Yeah, you can only get them
find
at
them on eBay.
The story that appeared in that Bloomberg Financial picked up about United Airlines.
Yes, I did.
It was 5-year-old story or something. 3-year-old.
2003. Google's news bots decided that this was the most important story, most read story of the day, or something like this.
Right. That United was declaring bankruptcy. Their stock lost 75% of its value throughout the day.
They went down to $3 a share. They went from 12 down to $3 a share.
Well, at the time that article was written, I think it was down to like pennies a share.
Yeah.
So to everybody's chagrin, you know, of course, it was an old story. Well, it was a Tribune newspaper story. I think it was Orlando Sentinel, something like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, now the Tribune's blaming Google.
Yes.
It was their fault, and they warned them before not to crawl their archives or whatever. And
United also, I believe, is contemplating action too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, when I heard that the Tribune was blaming Google, I was like, well, it's a shame Google wasn't around back when Dewey defeated Truman, you know, I mean.
Would have had somebody better to point a finger at.
Yeah, it was all Google's fault.
Yeah, well, Google's got nice big pockets now, too. So,
they might be happy
enough just to settle out of court with all this. There's Bloomberg, you know, Bloomberg's. They've got their own issues. First, they're reporting that Jobs is dead, and now they now they got this thing going on. And
itchy trigger finger there.
Yeah, I tell you, you know, it's a tough. I think it's a tough time for on the spot reporting and for keeping up. Things move. You know, everybody always says this. Every generation has said, "Oh, things are so fast now compared to how they were 20 years ago." But it's really true. Where you've got microblogging and Twitters and you know, your live blogging and even video blogging with cell phones. You know, Scoble goes out and he does this all the time, where he brings his cell phone, takes cell phone video, connected directly to the web, and his interviews are live that way. It's crazy keeping up with it. There was an article too recently.
Well, you don't have to, Mike.
Well, fortunately, fortunately we're on radio. So
really.
We're so retro. We're on radio.
The radio's an enduring media. It's an enduring, well-proven medium.
Absolutely.
Of course, we hope the tower doesn't get struck by lightning or anything like
that. Well, yes. I'm sitting far away from the mic, so I sound a little soft today. There was an article, I think just today or yesterday, about a tragic death of a three-year-old child. He was in an ice cream shop, and a pickup truck went through the door or something like this.
Yeah.
And but anyways, at his funeral, there were journalists there who were Twittering. They were blogging, live blogging. They were calling it microblogging in the news, which I hadn't heard that in association with Twitter before, but it makes sense. But they were microblogging the scene at the funeral, and this has caused a lot of uproar. Is it appropriate to use technology in that way, and to, you know, ethically, is it an intrusion of privacy to have basically a live feed of events at a tragedy like this? And, you know,
television does it all the time.
Well, I don't know which side I fall on.
That's a little more intimate.
Yeah.
That's a little more intimate, I think.
I guess it would depend, too. And none of the articles that I saw had text from the Twitters. And I think it would depend somewhat on what the content was. You know, it's one thing if they're describing the grieving process and the faces and stuff. Hey, you know what? It just occurs to me. John Pollard from Jot had asked me to kind of get to him quickly this morning if we could. We still haven't done Jay Garman. I'm way past. I'm gonna get Jay on right now. We'll do this.
It's a good idea.
I'll apologize to Jay that we're gonna have to go somewhat quick with him, and then we'll get right over on to John.
Oh, it's a shame. Jay is so great. It's a shame to cut him short.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hey, fellas, how's it going?
It's going very well this morning, as a matter of fact.
That's nice for a change.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. You know what? It is. I had two cups of coffee this morning instead of my usual one. I think I've just gotten to the age and progressed to the level where I need that second cup. I don't know why, but that's what's happening. And I was just telling Dave that unfortunately, we've got to kind of make it move quick this morning. We've got John Pollard, the CEO from Jot, on, and he had asked me if I could to get him on quicker rather than later because he's got his daughter's soccer game happening a little bit later. So I'm going to kind
of... Hey, I can't fault the man for that.
You know, family comes first, always, always. Yeah. And you know that now.
very much so.
whether you put it first or not, somebody in the family always does, so... and I know I am, at least I am, very excited to find out what the answer is to last week's Geek Trivia question, which was, what is the atomic number that is generally accepted by modern physicists as being a reasonable number for kryptonite, which of course is a fictional element known to decrease the powers of Superman.
Right, and that atomic number is 126, known formally as unbihexium, because they haven't actually given, like, names to elements that high up, because we haven't made them yet. They're just theoretical. No one's made one in a particle accelerator. And the reason they give that one to it is, I want to make sure I get this right, the heaviest theoretical double magic transuranic element on the nuclear island of stability. Now, what that translates to for those of us who aren't particle physicists, but you may have had high school chemistry, you remember the idea of electron shells?
Yes.
Like there are levels that electrons go to? Well, protons and neutrons have shells too. So their level, they sit in the nucleus. And they basically fill up like a Russian doll. When you get one level filled, the protons go to the next one. So there are these shell levels, and certain atomic numbers have what we call complete shells. The whole ring is full.
Okay.
And theoretically, when you get a full ring, you get an element with a stable half-life, say longer than 3 seconds.
Yes.
And Glenn Seaborg, for whom Seaborgium is named, figured this out. And so he did the math, and at atomic numbers 114, 120, and 126, there should be stable shells. If we could find a way to make these elements, these magic numbers would mean they would have half-lives long enough for the element to stick around a while. They'd still be radioactive and super heavy and all that, but they wouldn't just disappear in an instant.
Go.
So atomic 126 is the highest number of protons you could theoretically have and still be stable. Now, you could also have up to 186 neutrons and still have a stable shell. So technically, the isotope umbihexium 310, 126 protons and 184 neutrons would be the theoretically heaviest element possible that wouldn't have a half-life of basically an instant. So that isotope is, that being the fact, researchers that go and know this say, well, if that's the heaviest possible element that wouldn't disappear, that must be kryptonite.
That would be it. That would be, and it would probably pulsate green and
yes.
And exist in rocks.
Exactly.
In rock form.
Now, where the argument really goes off the rails is that you can't have an element that ends in ITE. That's reserved for minerals and compounds. So it would technically be kryptonium.
Okay.
But, you know, to me, it's a kryptonian meteorite. Therefore, we can call it kryptonite.
Okay, I can give them that. We can give them that little bit of credit. I guess that makes sense. Now, why that would negatively impact someone who came from the planet that the element was generated from, I've never been quite able to understand. But I don't know if there's ever been a good attempt at a rational explanation for that either. I don't know my Superman mythos well enough.
The best one I've heard, and this is from a comic writer named Warren Ellis, is that Superman gets his powers from the sun. So Kryptonians are able to absorb and process certain bands of radiation, and some, since they're sensitive to them, some are really good for them and some are really bad. So sunlight, yay, and kryptonite radiation, really not yay.
Mm.
So
that's
just how Kryptonians are wired. So they process radiation.
So it's somewhat like a color blindness or something along those lines.
Yeah, severe allergy. It's like, I really, really like, red meat, but peanuts will kill me.
Fair enough. That's good. That's the best explanation I've ever heard anyways.
You can't interrupt that radiation. The sun's radiation. Kryptonite interrupts the sun's radiation, right?
And keeps you from having
for
your
Kryptonians.
Free energy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Makes sense to me.
Why not? So what do you got on tap for us? And I got to say again, and this is, I know this is my fault, is that we had problems again this week with the podcast. The Podomatic, our podcast provider, wouldn't convert the audio properly when we upload. Now, I've uploaded the same blasted bit rate and kilohertz and everything for 2.5 years now, and no problems. This week they decided they didn't like it, so I found that out after a couple days. And thanks to everybody for emailing me and letting me know they were unable to download that audio. I've been doing it for 2 years. I just don't even bother testing it anymore. I have such faith in it, and I had to redo it and re-upload it and get it on. And Lou and Steve and various others sent me emails letting me know that it wasn't working. So that's probably why we didn't get any good responses this week to the trivia. It just came out too late. So what do you got on tap for us for next week, though?
Well, it being, Ike weekend down in Texas, and I have friends in Houston, friends and colleagues, so I thought I'd do a hurricane trivia question.
Cool.
And the funny thing about hurricanes is that they only exist in the North Atlantic, not because there aren't storms they're the exact same thing as hurricanes in other places. They just don't call them hurricanes there. Mm-hmm. Like, every region of the ocean has, like, a naming convention. And so some places they're typhoons, and some places they're severe tropical cyclones, and so on and so forth. So really just mostly the North Atlantic and other fringes around that, they're called hurricanes. But within that, only certain areas, basically the United States, names them, gives them, like, person names. But there was a case in 2004 where a hurricane formed in a region where nobody names them. Where did the first modern unnamed hurricane occur?
Interesting. The first modern unnamed hurricane.
Huh. Right. Obviously, throughout history, these storms have existed, or no one was around to name them.
Right,
but
yeah.
there's a modern unnamed hurricane where, like, this is in a place where we call them hurricanes, but it's not in a place where we give them names. This has only happened once.
Would a hurricane by any other name be quite
Was it called a no-name storm?
Honestly, to give a little more clue, just in case the podcast goes down, they get very severe storms in this area, but none had ever crept up to hurricane strength, and so it wasn't until the very last second that it actually hit Category 1, and it caused horrible damage, and everyone was, you know, terrified about it, but it was like, it was sort of a surprise, like, wow, that actually got big enough for that.
Yeah.
So they didn't even have time to, like, make up rules for this region. Like, if they'd seen it coming 3 days out, they probably could have come up with some idea for how to name it, but it came on them so quick, like, that's a big storm, oh crap, it's a hurricane, and now it's on land.
Yeah, and hurricanes typically take, you know, form well out to sea, right?
Yes, it's a little unusual that they hit that last mile of getting really rough right before they make landfall. It's usually they get really rough, and then they're like, hey, look, land, let's go play with that.
Yeah, yeah. And this one definitely made it, though, and was considered hurricane, but had no name. So we'll put that. I'm going to try and get the podcast out actually like Monday morning this time. I'm going to shoot to improve my usual Monday afternoon, Tuesday morning thing, just in case there are problems again this week. And this has been a couple of weeks running. Well, hey, I'm going to switch us over to John Pollard from JOT. As always, Jay, thank you very much for coming on. Good talking to you, and we'll be talking next week to catch up with it. And, of course, people can follow Jay at Jay Garman on Twitter. And also, of course, The Written Weird is always a good blog, although you haven't been updating it lately.
Yeah, I'm falling down on my blogging duties. I will cop to that.
Yeah, so get on that. Come on.
Yes, sir.
Well, thanks for participating in what we do.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're more fun than blogging, I got to say.
Well, and we're over a lot quicker, too.
That's true. Take it easy, Charles.
All right, take care. Thanks, Jay.
Thanks again, Jay.
And as always, we're overjoyed to have Jay on as a regular with us. Always good stuff. And I got to click.
Fantastic. Lovely.
I got to click into John right away. We were like way past where I thought we would be with him.
Who else comes up with abstract theorems about kryptonite?
It's true. Yeah. It's true. I I just threw that out as a...
On radio, where are you going to find that?
Hello, this is John Pollard.
Yeah, good morning, John. This is Michael, Tech Talk Castler. I've got Dave Saganaki with me here as well for the Tech Talk Show. I apologize right up front. We're calling you a few minutes later than I had hoped to. We got caught up with one thing and another, but we are excited to talk to you about JOT and the JOT service. Why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are, your position, and then we'll start talking about what JOT is and what JOT does.
Sure. Good morning. It is out here in Seattle, and it is it's a beautiful day. I'm the CEO and founder of JOT.com, JOTT.com, and I've been in the tech business for almost 20 years, and I'm having the time of my life right now with this startup. We're having a great time.
Awesome. Yeah, JOT is just a very cool company. How long has JOT been around for?
Well, we founded the company, in my home office in April of 2006. So it's been around. The company's been in existence for that long. We came out of stealth mode so that the public could actually use the product in December of 2006.
Okay. Yeah, I know. I've been using it myself for I was trying to remember earlier in the show here, and I can't even – all I remember is there was before Jot, and then there was after Jot. It's honestly – it's one of those services that I have just become, dependent upon. It's kind of more so than, like, the Twitter and the other stuff. It's kind of like the difference between having a cell phone and not. You know, you wind up getting so used to having the capability to do what Jot can do for you. And I'm going to let you tell us what Jot does in your words. I've explained it a few times on the show. You guys have been cool sites of the week for us a few times too. And but I want you to you'll do a much better job, I'm sure, of explaining to listeners what the service actually is.
Well, thanks for all of that. I appreciate it. It's great hearing customers and their stories of how they use it. There are literally hundreds of thousands of different ways that people use Jot, and that's great. It's kind of what we had hoped for. I guess if I had to sort of simplify it down to its most essential elements, Jot is a service that works on any phone. You don't need a fancy phone. You don't need an iPhone or a BlackBerry or a smartphone of some form, although those work great with Jot. Mm-hmm. Any phone. And the idea is that Jot is a service that helps you remember things, that helps you take notes, that helps you send email and text messages just with your voice. We don't want you to have to look at a screen and triple tap words in or what have you. We want you to be able to call a simple phone number, and it's a toll-free number, 1-866-JOTT-123. So you call this toll-free number, and many of our users have this on speed dial now,
mm-hmm.
and you'll hear a very simple question, who do you want to Jot? And that is the sort of the gateway for a lot of different things, but it's the simplest. You could say yourself. Who do you want to Jot? Myself. Or who do you want to Jot? Michael. Or who do you want to Jot? Family. And then you'll hear a beep, and then you simply say what you need to say. Remember to make the donut, or remember to get the tires rotated, or remember to inflate the tires, or remember to buy flowers for the wife. Whatever it is, and you can hang up. It's simple as that. We ask you a question, you talk, you can hang up, and you can know with great assurance that we have captured your voice, and we will convert your voice to text and deliver that to you.
Okay.
And it's really as simple as that.
We have a running dispute between Mike and I about how you convert it to text. How do you do it?
I'm convinced that there is a group of people sitting somewhere and actually transcribing this. But Dave has his faith in technology and thinks that this is.
I think it's very sophisticated voice reco.
Well, you guys are both right.
Oh,
you're both right.
Of course.
You're both.
Dang! Now, who's going to get the money?
So this is a good show to talk about this. I mean, we've actually. If you Google our various interviews that we've done over time, and we've been in the MIT Technology Review and other things, we've been really transparent about this from the very beginning of the company. And mm-hmm. here's why: is that there are companies that are founded that are speech recognition companies, and really what they want to do is they want to prove that speech recognition works. That's what they want to do. They want to build a speech recognition engine that is perfect, and that's a laudable goal. It's a great thing. But what we decided was that what we want to do is we want to have a service that just works, and we want it to work no matter how you talk, wherever you're talking, on what kind of, and no matter what kind of phone with whatever kind of microphone it has in it,
mm-hmm.
on whatever cellular network you happen to be calling on, and with really, frankly, hit or miss kind of quality of service. We just want it to work, because when you got this great idea or you need to send this message, you don't want to be thinking about syntax or, noise or anything like that. You just want to say something and know that we've got it. And that is a huge technology problem for speech recognition. There's the science gets better every single year, and it will continue to get better, and, it'll make incremental improvements, 1%, 2%, maybe
yeah.
every year. But the thing that it can't handle is people talking normally with noise in the background and not formally dictating things. I don't know how old your listeners are. It's probably a wide range. But, back in the 60s and 70s, this is before my time, but there was a sort of a culture of dictation. There were professionals who would walk around with with tape recorders, and they would know how to dictate letters, and it's a very formalistic way of speaking. And what we do instead is we say, you know, talk the way you want and hang up, because, you know, we just want people to be able to use it naturally. And that involves a lot of ums and people going backwards and forwards, and, you know, involves a lot of proper nouns like names and places and things. So that is a tough problem for speech recognition. So what we do, in a nutshell, is we actually have agreements with two different companies that provide speech recognition, and we're working on a third right now. And we take the voice stream and we pump it into these engines, and we have some pretty interesting technology which figures out which one might be the most appropriate one. And we do the best we can with speech recognition. And then after that, we, you know, speed of light, using speed of light, you know, electrons, we put it into a place, into some call centers that we've hired in places where it's affordable. And we have people who are really, really smart, really, really dedicated, and completely actually dedicated to this one task of cleaning that speech recognition up. And what's interesting about it is that this is the same method that, you know, the legal industry has used for years to offshore some of its dictation, that the medical industry uses to offshore transcription of doctor's notes. It's really very much the same kind of operational process. It's, you know, it's very secure. It's, you know, a clean environment with pretty committed people who have, you know, learned English and, you know, want to apply those skills. So it's actually a really good arrangement for everybody. People, you know, in this market get to have a, you know, incredibly cheap service that, does this thing very well, and people overseas, you know, get to use their English skills and understand more about the United States. So it works all well all around.
Yeah, and it does really produce pretty accurate results, especially if you, you know, if you know that you're saying a proper name that's going to be really tough to interpret, you can just spell it out, and they'll get it right then. The other thing that's nice as well is, of course, that when if you're sending the messages via email to people, like you say family, which you alluded to, that you can actually configure a group. So you would send to an entire group of people.
But if
it's sending that to email, they will also get a link back to the original audio. And so if the text just doesn't make sense, or the proper names are misspelled beyond recognition or whatever, which does not happen very often, I'll say, at least not with my texts, then they can listen to the actual audio and hear what you said in the first place. So
yeah, that's right. That backup is always there for you. And, you know, it's remarkable, some of the things that we've gotten better and better. You know, when we came out of, you know, stealth mode, we did an okay job, but we were far from perfect, and we're much, much better now, for a lot of different reasons, but most of it just hard work and making sure that we have, you know, outstanding speech engines and outstanding people to clean up speech engines mistakes. So we've gotten a lot better, and yeah, that sound file is always there. It's yours, you know, and it's, yep, we make it accessible for you.
Now, was this programming that was done for the speech recognition, and as you said, there were some pretty complicated algorithms to determine where to send it and so on. Was that all done in-house, or did you guys, you know, rest on the shoulders of other companies that had done it but just not done the same thing as what you're doing? You know, what was the initial group of people you had around you back in, what was it, April of 2006? What did that look like?
Yeah. Well, my co-founder and I, so, you know, when I was in college, I worked in the computer center, you know, and did some programming, and then post-college, I worked for some technology companies and did some programming, but, you know, probably in the late 80s, I decided that, you know, I wasn't good enough at it to make a career out of it, and so, but I wanted to stay in technology, and so I went sort of on the business, sort of the customer marketing side of, you know, route. Management route. Mm-hmm. My co-founder, who I met at Microsoft, he's our CTO, and he's just generally a genius, and he's a programmer. And so he and I started this thing, you know, looking at customer requirements and, you know, what do people really want to get done, and how could we build this thing, and we began to prototype stuff, and then we hired a programmer, another programmer, because we had too much work to do, and then we kind of got it to an alpha stage, and then, you know, we hired another programmer to work on some of the other things, but it was really sort of a small crew of maybe four people, another contractor, who got the initial thing off the ground, and, you know, it was pretty bare bones, but, you know, these guys are smart. I've been really lucky to work with, you know, smart, super hardworking people, and that's how we got it done.
Yeah, and then and you mentioned that you're using these services too. So I imagine you know, one question I had was, of course, about the growth. How do you handle that kind of growth? Because once you went from, as you said, you know, alpha to stealth mode and then to public, I've got to believe that the user base had to just increase exponentially. I mean, you got, you know, you got posted on some of the bigger blogs like Lifehacker. You know, the of course the Tech Talk show picked you as a cool site of the week, so I'm sure immediately there was a huge spike in numbers right there.
A tsunami. interest.
Because you were using services, you know, external services, was that pretty easy to ramp up the scale that you needed, or did you wind up having to really do a lot of infrastructure work internally too?
Well, it's, you know, it's a great question. It's, you know, planning, you know, measure twice, cut once. Planning really is a huge part of what we do, and we have to think about, you know, how we're going to grow. And, you know, in the, right now we're big enough. I mean, we have almost 500,000 customers, so which is enormous for a mobile service that, you know, doesn't have like a mobile carrier pushing us or what have you. You know, that we're big enough for that, you know, a coverage in a given blog or whatever, whether it's you guys or you know, TechCrunch or whoever it is, that spike is going to be relatively, you know, and it's a percentage, a small percent of our volume. So we can handle it now. But you're right, in the early days, you know, it was a little scary, you know, whether it was our servers in our data center or whether it was, you know, the speech recognition engines or whether it was, you know, people on the back end cleaning things up, we kind of had to say, well, you know, what do we think we're going to be doing? And we'd have to hire those people or put that infrastructure in place and have the right kind of code in place. And sometimes we were massively over capacity and sometimes we were under capacity. And you know, in the early days, people sometimes, it took them a while to get their jot because things were sort of queued up. But that's, a lot of that's been pretty ironed out. You know, we had some, we were, one incident that was pretty scary for us was back in January of 2007, and we got put on the front page of Yahoo. And we're not, you know, not Yahoo News, not Yahoo Finance, but the front page of Yahoo. And we thought something was going wrong. In fact, we thought we were being hacked. And, you know, because it was just this enormous wave, you know, relative to what we were doing every day, this enormous wave of traffic hit. And, you know, we handled it through various means, but it wasn't a good experience for our customers or for us. We were really sweating it. We were up all night. But, you know, since then, it's been great.
Yeah, that is tough. I hear about the dig effect, you know, all the time. DIGG, which is another website we've talked about. And yeah, you know, that if you're not prepared to handle it, and really, who is? You know, at that point, like you said, when you're kind of, you know, hanging out, just thinking about doing something different, and then you get pegged on there. It's that is tough. Now one thing that's changed recently for Jot, and one of the reasons I really wanted to get you guys on too, was that of course your service levels have changed, and you're beginning that really tough process where you're switching from a company that's being supported by venture capitalism and instead trying to monetize internally and actually turn a profit on things now. Can you tell us a little bit about that process? And we can't talk directly cost and pricing to customers, but if we can talk about maybe the service levels that you'd be offering now, and more importantly, at least to me, is, you know, what are some of the tough decisions that you have to make to say, you know what, we're turning this previously free-to-all users service into a tiered discussion, and what things are going to be offered for free and what won't be?
Yeah, it's a great discussion. And it's been, you know, it's actually been one of the most, you know, at the same time, interesting parts of my career, at the same time, you know, really stressful because, you know, none of us want to disappoint people. I mean, I think that's sort of a trait we have, is that we really just don't want to disappoint our customers. And so, you know, for 2 years, we've been pretty, it's been a great part of this company, is that we've just been very, very open about things. And so when people a long time ago used to ask us, hey, you know, this thing's free, how are you going to make some money? We've been very clear that we said, you know, at some point we're probably going to have some paid services but we'll always have a free part of the service. Mm-hmm. And it was, we sort of suspected that back then, because that's something that was a real goal of ours. We want JOT to be usable by millions of people, not just, you know, people who can, you know, have a big bank account or whatever. And so that's been a goal of ours, and achieving that's been really key and you know, central to what we're doing. And so we've done that, but it wasn't without a lot of pain. And so what we've done is, over 2 years, we've probably done close to 4 million JOTs, and that's a lot. That's a lot of, you know, recordings and transcriptions and customer interactions. And during that time, you know, we've studied very carefully about how people use it, and the time they take, how long they record, how often they do it, the types of things that they want to do, the kind of the difficulty we have, the expense of certain things. We put all that into a database, mm-hmm. an internal database. Obviously, it's very secure, but to look at sort of how people use it. So that was one thing. And the second thing we did is we talked to customers a lot. We've done a bunch of surveys to parts of our base. We've done a lot of focus groups. We have something that we do quarterly called the JOT User Group it's a great resource for us, because we have people who come in, you know, we buy some pizza, and we have a really candid conversation about the product, and that goes for a couple hours. So we have all these methods that we talk to customers, and we put all this together and said, okay, this is how certain people use it. This is how other people use it. Some people tell us that they want to pay for it and they don't want advertising. Some people say they'll never pay for anything on the internet, and, you know, and they do want advertising, or they will accept advertising. And so what we had to do was try to figure out what parts of the service do we take off, and what do we add. And so the hardest decision in all of this, to get right to your point, was for email, delivering things in email. Mm-hmm. You know, the old service was you call a number, you get a simple question, you say something, hang up, and then a couple minutes later it shows up in your email. I mean, what could be better than that?
Yep.
The problem with that was, how do you monetize that? How do you pay for that with advertising? Because most email clients now, whether it's Outlook or Gmail or whatever it is, strip off advertising.
Yeah.
It's very, very difficult to have an effective advertising-based email program. People hate getting ads in email. They think it's spam, by definition. So we said, all right, well, you know, what we're going to have to do is make the hard choice that says that people who want an ad-supported program, a free program, won't get it in email. So that was a big decision to make, because we knew that a lot of people would be disappointed about
yep.
that. So what we said is, all right, if we're going to do that, we had better give them something else that's almost as good or better. And so what we did is we spent a lot of time working on our website, which is, you can also get your JOTs on the web. So the site is really, really fast. It's beautiful. It works well. It's very elegant. So that's better. And then we also built this little tool, really only in terms of its, you know, footprint on the desktop, but it's a beautiful thing called JOT Express. And think of it as, you know, if you have an IM client or a Skype or something like that that sits on your desktop, it's really a very, very simple, super fast list manager that works even offline.
I hadn't seen this. This sounds really cool.
Yeah, and it just sits there. It's very simple. You know, we haven't tried to over-feature it or put a lot of bells and whistles on it or, you know, a lot of stuff. It's just really, really clean. And it's your list. It's your JOTs right there, super fast. And everybody who has the free side gets that as well. And we will serve advertising in that, but the advertising is going to be really, really relevant. So, mm-hmm. if you say, call the plumber, we're not going to give you an ad to refinance your mortgage. It is going to be a really, really nice container, and it's a great tool. And so far, very quietly, that tool, we have thousands of downloads of that, and the feedback has been awesome. I mean, people who are sort of initially very disappointed that they, you know, weren't getting their jobs in email anymore are all of a sudden going, hey, yeah. these guys actually delivered an even better tool in yeah. JOT Express. So,
yeah, and
you know,
and
that
I
was
to,
the
I
hardest
to...
decision.
I have to admit, I'm one of those people too. You know, that was initially very disappointed with that. Now that with that tool though, that is going to make a big difference. I can see that restoring a lot of the the free user functionality to make it at least a less painful transition. Of course, you want to incent people to, you know, pay for the service because there are additional features with the service. One thing I know too that is on the next tier of service level, which was very useful to me in the free service as well, was and is convincing me to probably up my subscription, is the ability to connect to the multiple external other services like Remember the Milk and Google Calendar and so on, and
that's
which
right.
is all good stuff. You know what? Unfortunately, my co-host is pointing at the clock and waving at his watch, and now the next hour's DJs are coming in and they're waving at me too.
It's been such a good interview that it could go on forever.
I want to let people know. They've got to check out Jot.com. I've been a longtime user of it myself. There are tiered service levels now that are going to give you what you need, and it's cool stuff. And with this new desktop-based application, I definitely got to check that out. Is there one last thing you can leave listeners with? Something if you had any last words about the service or what they should do with it. Give them now, and then we'll close her out.
Sure. I mean, I guess the way I'd finish it up is we believe that any busy person should have, it's a no-brainer to have JOT123 on speed dial. And whether it's a free part of the service or you're paying for it, it doesn't matter. It's still really useful because sometimes you need to remember things. A lot of us do. Sometimes you're in the car and you need to send a message to someone and you don't want to do something dangerous. It makes a ton of sense to have it on your phone. We almost think of it as like AAA. It's just great reassurance for your ideas and for your communication scenarios. It's a wonderful service. So,
awesome.
I invite people to try it out. It's a fantastically good free part of the product that is really full featured. Try it out, and if you don't like that free part, you can upgrade, or there's really no cost to trying it at all.
That's right. Very cool. Well, hey, thank you so much, John. We really appreciated the time to talk with you, and we'll hopefully catch up again later when the next big thing happens.
Thanks, guys. It's been a pleasure.
All right, take care.
Thank you. Great job, John. A great interview.
Absolutely. That was John Pollard, CEO with Jot, JOTT.com. Check that out. I'm switching us over to pay some of the bills around here. We got to monetize too. Gosh darn it. We'll be back at you in just a minute with one or two maybe cool sites if we have time. Talk to you in a minute.
WRLR 98.3 FM.
All Custom Electronics Incorporated offers service for all of your audio and video needs. Surround yourself with many audio and video possibilities. Dream a system and All Custom Electronics Incorporated can put it together. They have many brands of equipment available. Their services include installation of in-wall, in-ceiling, surround sound, home theater, and commercial electronic sound systems. Also, multi-room audio, video, and low voltage systems. All Custom Electronics Incorporated is a proud sponsor of WRLR and assisted with the design and building of WRLR studios. They have over 14 years of experience to help you design and build your dream sound system. All Custom Electronics can be reached at 847-254-1234 or at allcustomelectronics.com.
Hi, my name is Jackie Cotman, and I'm the person who finds foster parents for the kids at Allendale Association. Allendale is a temporary home and foster placement agency for abused and neglected children ages 8 to 18. My heart breaks every day when I see how much these children want and need a loving home environment and how much pain they have endured in their short lives. What can I tell you that will stir your heart to become a foster parent? Here are some of the questions the children ask me.
How long will I have to wait for a family?
Do you think a family would want me?
Foster parents are just like you. They have a lot of love and will make a commitment to their foster children to be there for them, no matter what. Perhaps you will consider becoming a foster parent and call me at 847-245-6201. I want to find homes for every child at Allendale. The need is so very great. Call me to find out more. Your rewards will be eternal. 847-245-6201.
Hello. Hey, Lake County, don't forget to tune in to 98.3 FM every Wednesday from 10 to 1.
For Midday Madness.
That's crazy.
Yeah, you heard it. That's right. Midday Madness every Wednesday from 10 to 1 right here on 98.3 FM WRLR.
That's crazy.
It's crazy.
It is.
Oh, my gosh. All right.
It is crazy.
Hey, we're back. I got about a minute here to do our cool sites of the week and all that. We're probably not going to be able to even I'll intro the podcast only song. But hey, cool sites of the week here. I got some great stuff. I thought this was so cool. Now, you heard recently about Real Play was coming out with a DVD ripper burner. You know, you can take them onto your computer and watch DVDs on your PC,
yeah.
Which previously haven't been allowed. Well, hey, I've got some free services that'll do it for you without DRM. I'm going to link you to one is full instructions on how to do it with links to the appropriate software that you're going to need on how to rip full DVDs to your hard drive and avoid all the nasty DRM stuff. It's through lifehacker.com, and I will give you the link in the newsletter, so you'll get that. And then
something to look forward to.
Absolutely. And then on the flip side of it, of course, what's the next thing you need to do? Well, you got to burn them too, right? So I'm going to send you a link to ISO.SNOEKonline.com. It is, again, instructions on how to successfully burn or write an ISO image to CD or DVD. If you don't know what an ISO image is, that's actually the digital image that is or can be created from a CD or DVD that just like is track, it's track information as opposed to the actual files and so on, although you can pull those out.
It's like
there.
A picture. It's like a, it's almost like a fax.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all good stuff. And so I think we're gonna clear us out here right now. I'm gonna finish this. I'm pulling up some stuff. Now the podcast only song of the week. I have got to tell you. Be aware. It is NSFW this week. It's just a deep, dark song that I just totally got into.
Good for this time of year.
Perfect. Yeah. I was listening to it on the way over. It's perfect. It's by The Hollows. It's called Why is the Question. There is F-bombs. There's graphic sexual descriptions, things like that. So if you got kids around you, and I know we've got listeners with kids, turn your radio off right now and flip to something else. but we're not playing it on the air.
This is for the podcast only.
Yeah. Oh my, you know, I got people freaking out already just to mention it. Don't worry, this is only for the podcast listeners. I'm warning you. But it's a great song. If you want to listen to a great tune, stay tuned. You'll get that. And if you are listening live on the radio or you're listening through our stream, which is live and back on again, WRLR.FM, stay
thanks
tuned. Thanks to Jeff and Jeff. Absolutely. I did not do anything with it this time, even with my title as IT manager. They're going to take that away from me because the engineers took care of it. And stay tuned, though, to Jeff Davis and Zane. We got all the hits coming up in just a minute. And
Midday Madness, if you're listening on Wednesday.
2 minutes, and I'm setting up some more spots here for them, so they're all good to go. And we'll talk to you. We'll talk to you next week.
See you next week.
Have a great one.
WRLR 98.3 FM.
Classic Printery Incorporated.
As I lay me down to fall asleep with my demons dying and my pilot light weak, I curse the last 6 months I've been hiding behind.